ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So today we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Thank you. And this is 8th Canto, Chapter 12, Text Number 37. Let's see if I can get on the screen here. There we go. Thank you. Thank you, Prabhu. You're a genius. Okay, so today we'll just start here. As I mentioned, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th Canto, Chapter 12, Text Number 37. And today's topic, we'll discuss pride. And there's two kinds of pride. We'll see Lord Shiva here, he's very proud. But the kind of pride we may have, thinking we're independent, that's not the right kind of pride. So we'll go right to the verse. Tam aviklavam avridam. Tam aviklavam avridam. Alakshya Madhusudana. Alakshya Madhusudana. Uvacha Parama Prito. Uvacha Parama Prito. Brivrat Swam Poshim Tanum. Brivrat Swam Poshim Tanum. Tamaviklavam aridam. Alaksha Madhusudanaha. Uvacha Paramaprito. Bibratswam Purusham Parushim Tanum. Tamaviklavam aravindam. Alakshya Madhusudana. Uvacha Paramaprito. Bibrat Swam Parushim Tanum. Tamiklavam Aridam. Alakshya Madhusudana. It's all. Random. Lakshya Madhusudana. Vacha Paramaprito. At some parashim param. Tamaviklavam ardam. Alakshya Madhusudanaha. Uvacha paramaprito. Bibrat swam paushim tanum. Tamaviklavam arindam. Alaksha marusudanaha. Uvacha paramaprito. Bibrat swam paushim tanum. Tamaviklavam avridam. Avlaksha madhusudanaha. Vacha paramaprito. Vaksam paushim tanum. Vaishnavis. Tamaviklavam avridam. Alaksha Madhusudanaha. Uvacha paramaprito. Bibrat swam purushim tanum. Tamaviklavam avridam. Alaksha Madhusudanaha. Uvacha paramaprito. Bibrat swam paushim tanum. Tamaviklavam avridam. Alaksha madhusudanaha. Vacha paramaprito. Bibrat swam purushim tanum. Him, Lord Shiva, aviklavam, without being agitated by the incident that had taken place, avridam, without being ashamed, alakshya, seen, madhusudanaha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is known as Madhusudana, the killer of the demon Madhu. Uvacha said, Paramapritaha, being very pleased. Bibrat, assuming, Swam, his own. Paushim, original. Tanum, form. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Seeing Lord Shiva unagitated and unashamed, Lord Vishnu, Madhusudana, was very pleased. Thus he resumed his original form and spoke as follows. Please repeat. Seeing Lord Shiva unagitated and unashamed, Lord Vishnu Madhusudana was very pleased. Thus he resumed his original form and spoke as follows. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Although Lord Shiva was aghast at the potency of Lord Vishnu, he did not feel ashamed. Rather, he was proud to be defeated by Lord Vishnu. Nothing is hidden from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for he is in everyone's heart. Indeed, the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Sarva shachaham hridi sannivisto mataha smritir gyanam apohanam cha. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Whatever happened had taken place under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore There was no cause to be sorry or ashamed. Although Lord Shiva is never defeated by anyone, when defeated by Lord Vishnu, he felt proud that he had such an exalted and powerful master. Om Gyana Timarandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshus Unmilitamena Tasmaya Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitamena Bhutave Swayam Upagadamayam Dadanti Swapadantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhara Srivasari Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Tam aviklavam avridam alaksha marusudana uvacha parama prito. Oops, sorry. Something's in the way here. Bibrat swam purushim tanum. So the verse again. Seeing Lord Shiva unagitated and unashamed, Lord Vishnu, Madhusudana, was very pleased. Thus he resumed his original form and spoke as follows. So this is a very interesting verse. And maybe someone remembers from the previous verse something unique about these two verses. Open book test. No, but it's very interesting. Practically, in the purport of, at the end of this purport, is almost exactly the same as the end of the previous purport. Except in this purport, Prabhupada adds, although Lord Shiva is never defeated by anyone, when defeated by Lord Vishnu, he felt proud that he has such an exalted and powerful master. And in the previous purport, he said, the Lord Shiva was already aware of the supreme power of Lord Vishnu, but when he was actually put into bewilderment, he felt proud to have such an exalted master. So we see here how Lord Krishna alone is the supreme controller, and everyone else is a servant. And he makes everyone dance as he desires. So here we can see graphically how he made Lord Shiva dance. So Lord Shiva, though, is a very powerful personality. Here he was aghast, and practically he was just like an animal who was maddened and really embarrassed amongst practically everyone. But even though this happened to him, he wasn't angry. He didn't become agitated, nor was he disturbed or even ashamed, but he was proud. He was attracted actually to Krishna, and this was kind of a pastime, you know, that he performed just to show Krishna, showing that I can make anyone dance. I am the supreme personality of Godhead. So we know the first symptom of a saintly person is what? Tolerance. Titikshava. And here we the pastime where Lord Shiva is being blasphemed by Daksha. What did Lord Shiva do? He just stood there. I mean, he just sat there. He didn't become angry. He was very tolerant. So this is a sign of a saintly person. So Lord Shiva is not an ordinary person. His action is in a category of himself. He's not Vishnu Tattva or Jiva Tattva, but he's in between. He's a very powerful personality, but yet still he is subordinate to Krishna, as this pastime proves. And as Lord Shiva will say to his wife, O goddess, you have now seen this illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the unborn master of everyone. And he said, although I am one of the principal expansions of his lordship, even I was illusioned by his energy. What then is to be said of others who are fully dependent on Maya? And he was explaining to her how I was performing my mystic yoga for 1,000 years. And then you asked me, who was I meditating upon? Now here is that Supreme Person to whom time has no entrance and who the Vedas cannot understand. So this is who and what Lord Shiva was absorbed in. And Sukadeva Goswami explained in this chapter, and we've seen through this whole pastime, he explains to the king that that person who bore that great mountain on his back for churning the ocean of milk is that same Supreme Personality of Godhead, known as Sarga Dhanva. And now I have described to you his prowess. And in this chapter is so graphic, the prowess, not only to become Kurma, who put the mountain on his back, he was on top of it. He was the one who helped with the whole thing practically. And he came in this form as Mohinimurti, another one of his great powerful expansions who can bewilder anyone. So we get a benediction just by hearing this pastime. Sukadeva Goswami gives a benediction. He said that the endeavor of one who constantly hears or describes this narration of the churning of the ocean of milk will never be fruitless. Indeed, chanting the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the only means to annihilate suffering in this material world. So just see how fortunate we are to actually have this knowledge with us. So there's a very nice verse. It's in the first, or actually in the second canto. This is the ninth chapter, text number one. The previous chapter, eight, was when Sukadev Goswami was approached by Maharaj Pariksit with all these questions. In fact, the chapter is entitled, I think, Questions by Maharaj Pariksit. And this chapter nine is answers by citing the Lord's version. And this is a very important verse. One may think how we got here, why are we illusioned, what happened to the jiva, like the fall of the jiva question everybody's concerned about. So it's a nice verse. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, because his question was exactly that. How is it that the jiva, who is completely separate from this mature world, how did he get here? What happened? So Sukadeva Goswami is answering. Unless one is influenced by the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no meaning to the relationship of the pure soul in pure consciousness with the material body. The relationship is just like a dreamer's seeing his own body working. So just see the power of Krishna's energy. So unless one is influenced, how can he be? This is the power of Krishna. And this was such an important verse. Prabhupada gave a lecture on this particular verse in Tokyo in 1972. And Prabhupada made everybody in the class chant this verse. And he had them go over and he taught them to pronounce it perfectly. He would correct them. And he was explaining how important this mantra is. He said, just practice this one mantra daily. And each mantra from this Bhagavatam will purify you hundreds of yards daily, he said. So go forward. He said these mantras are very powerful. They're given by Vyasadeva, and they're spoken through the mouth of Sukadeva Goswami, which even becomes more and more sweet. And then when it's received through the Parampara, the system of pure devotees, then it becomes still more sweet than before. So this is what's happening. So these mantras are like infallible instructions, Prabhupada explained to them. And if you chant this mantra, the vibration will cleanse the whole atmosphere. And wherever you go, in any part of the world, if you chant this mantra, Prabhupada said, oh, you'll be received like God. It's so nice. This is very powerful. So, the same quote of the Bhagavad Gita 15:15 was also quoted in this particular verse purport that I'm mentioning here in the second canto. And Prabhupada said how he quotes this verse 15:15 that Krishna, he knows everything. He's the witness in the heart, and he knows all our desires. So in this particular chapter of 15:15, it's a very powerful chapter. Just look at these verses. This particular verse explains Krishna. And then it goes on to the verse 16 to 18. And by studying those three verses, you actually understand your relationship with Krishna. Sambandha Gyan. And then when you go to text number 19, then it explains the process of attaining that Krishna. Understanding Krishna, then attaining him. And that's Abhidhyaya Gyan. And then verse 20 of this 15th chapter refers to the goal, Prayojana. So just see how powerful just a few selected verses or even one verse. It's so powerful. So here we are in the spiritual world. We're serving Krishna. And Maharaj Pariksit asking that how is it that the living entity began his material life. Although he's apart from this material body. And it's perfectly answered in that particular verse that I mentioned. So what happens is that the spirit soul is distinct from this material conception. But because it's influenced by the material energy, then that's called Atma Maya. And in the first canto, it shows Vyasadeva's realization how when he was enlightened by his spiritual master, Narada Muni, he explained to him and he was inspired to write the Srimad Bhagavatam. And before that, he had a vision and he could see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He could see the living entities and he could see the material energy. So all these things exist. And then to understand everything and to become enlightened, we have to understand these three things and that they all three exist. So Prabhupada mentioned in that purport that the Lord is present within the heart of every living entity and all the living entities' consciousness and forgetfulness are influenced by the Lord. That's that 15:15 verse. And because the living entity is a little independent, you know, he's serving Krishna. Krishna is the, you know, we're just conscious of Krishna. That's all we want to do is serve Krishna. But all of a sudden, a little independence, the living entity looks away from Krishna for a second. And what does he see? He sees the glaring energy of Krishna. It's a reflection of Krishna and is attracted to that. And he thinks he's a little independent and he thinks that I can go out and I could become the master of this. It's a place where I can play God. So this is the desire of all the living entities, is that they want to become equally as powerful as the Lord, although they're not fit. But the living entities are illusioned by the will of the Lord because he desires. And therefore he enters this illusion. It's like a dreaming that one's a king, that one's this, that one's that. So that's the first sinful will that we had. The living entity, he wants to become the Lord. And thus, the Lord creates a dreamland, a utopia, where he can actually think he's becoming like the Lord. And Prabhupada uses a nice analogy. Just like a child is crying for the moon, is having a tantrum, screaming, what does the mother do? She gives him a mirror and you just reflect the moon in the mirror. The same thing Mother Yasoda did for Krishna. He was acting as a child. He wanted the moon and Mother Yasoda put all these pots of water and then you could see the moon reflecting in all of those. So this is like the material world. We're all dreaming in these illusory reflections only. And what are we doing? We're dreaming, oh, this is mine, and this is I. I am this body, And everything in relation to this body is mine. So these are the misconceptions. But the pure soul and pure consciousness, there's no misconception. There's no dream. He never forgets service of the Lord. But he's eternally a servitor of the Lord in transcendental love, as we can see here. But what does he give this up for? To see what he gives it up for. What is that? Anybody recognize that? It's a mirror. The mirror of Erized. Anybody remember now? The mirror of Erized. You know what Erized means? It's just desire spelled backwards. And on the mirror, you see there's some sayings there. And it's kind of looks like a different language. But what it says is, I show not your face, but your heart's desire. So this is actually one of the magical items from the movie Harry Potter. When, you know, we were taking the kids to these movies like that, I had this one really struck me. And it's interesting how Harry and Ron would go before the mirror, and whatever their innermost desires were would be revealed to them. So Harry had, you know, some good desires. He never saw his parents, they were killed. So he saw them in the mirror. And Ron, who was his friend, he always wanted to become, you know, the best at school. So he sees himself with all these medals and the cup and the winner, this and that. But the master or the teacher there, he saw that they were becoming attached to this thing and fascinated. And so he said, this mirror shows us nothing more or less than the deepest, most desperate desires of our hearts. However, this mirror will neither give knowledge nor truth. Men have wasted away before it, entranced by what they have seen, or have been driven mad, not knowing if what it shows is real or even possible. So this is just like the material world. We're in a reflection. It's just a mirror of our material desires that Krishna is so kind. He's fulfilling them for us. So this is what the mirror does. The mirror of Erized just reflects the heart's desire. Just like in the same way we see a regular mirror just shows our external appearance, right? And that external appearance is a manifestation of what our desires are. It's like that idol we hang our hat on every day. That body. So these verses are so important, and Srila Prabhupada wanted us to see these verses every day, because we will forget. One day you go without reading, you will forget that I'm not this body. It's so attractive, this material energy. It's so powerful. And Prabhupada uses a nice analogy, just like the moon. It's covered with scattered clouds, and it's passing. But it looks like the moon is moving, doesn't it? We've seen that. So actually Prabhupada says, the moon is not moving, it's actually maya, it's illusion. And similarly, the living entity, because he's a spiritual spark of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's actually not an illusion. He actually didn't fall in. He's not fallen. But he's thinking, I'm fallen. I'm material. So that's the reason. He's thinking, I'm this body. But actually, the body doesn't have any connection with him, any more than the moon has any connection with the clouds. So this body, it's changing, it's dying. So the same way, the moon, the clouds passing over in a different way. But the moon is far, far away from the clouds. But it appears that the moon is moving because of the clouds. So these are the clouds of ignorance in this material world. So this is that Atma Maya. This is Krishna, his maneuvering, his handling this material energy, this illusory energy. And it all develops, why? Because we forgot Krishna. We turned our focus away from Krishna for a second. So that's just this whole thing with this illusory body is due to our forgetfulness of Krishna. So we wanted to forget him. So Krishna created a universe to where it's like the universe is what? Our apartment where we get to live and play God. So just look at it in another way here. If you see a graph, and just say we have, as an example here, we have so many zeros. If you have 6 zeros, how many is that? But that's 1,000,000 zeros you got. But what if it goes further? What if you have 12 zeros? There's 1,000,000,000. See the graph? What if you have 15 zeros? That's 1,000,000,000,000. So see, as the devotee's already saying, what is the value? It's zero. So this is the difference here. Actually, these zeros have no value. Doesn't matter how many zeros there are, there's no value if you forget this one, the one of Krishna. And that's what everyone is failing to realize, that there's nothing in this mature world. So I'm going right to the next one. So we have to put Krishna in the center. If you put Krishna in the center, just this one thing, then all those zeros become so valuable. It's incalculable. So just see here. What's the difference between an orphan child and the child of a prince or the child of a king? And this is the price we have to pay when we come into the mature world for this so-called independence. You can become independent, like play God, but what's the price? Birth, disease, old age, and death. So here you may take birth as an orphan child. You may take birth as the son of a king. But still, it doesn't matter, Prabhupada says, how we got here. But we have to become fixed and just try to understand who we really are and try to remember. And in that way, we will become purified. And this is a fact. One may try to become a devotee. You know, how is it like we're considered sadhus? But Prabhupada says, and the Bhagavad Gita says, that even if someone has performed some bad activity, still he should be considered a sadhu. Why? Because it's described in the Bhagavad Gita, if one is engaged in devotional service, doesn't matter what his position is, then he'll be considered saintly. And that we should actually view him as a sadhu. But there's an interesting statement here that says, we should never view him as not a sadhu. His determination is completely fixed. Even if you may go to hell or obtain an animal birth because of unavoidable sinful reactions, but if I never give up my exclusive worship of Sri Krishna, such determination is praiseworthy. So this is very important as devotees. We may think, this person's fallen. Or we may look at Shiva like Daksha, you're criticized. And we may think, what if this happened to me with something that happened to Lord Shiva? Become embarrassed, become like that. Do we become angry? Do we become ashamed? Or if it happens to someone else, do we find fault? Do we criticize? So we have to understand that even doesn't matter how you got here, but what matters is that you engage in the process of devotional service. And if you engage in this process, then you will become purified. Krishna says he immediately becomes righteous. Not that he will be, but he does. Just like we have here Prince William. you know, the son of a great rich family. So what's the difference between an orphan and the son of a king? So when the son or the child is in difficulty, all he has to do is turn to the king, who's all-powerful. So what's the difficulty then? There's no difficulty. It's just an apparent difficulty. Actually, there's no such thing as difficulty. Because if we render service to Krishna, then Krishna is in control of everything, right? Krishna is the owner, he's the controller. And if we serve him, then what would be the difficulty? Prabhupada describes very nicely in the purport that when a diamond is set in a golden ring, it looks very nice. The gold is glorified. At the same time, the diamond is glorified. The Lord and living entity eternally glitter. And when the living entity becomes inclined to the service of the Supreme Lord, he looks like gold. The Lord is a diamond, and so the combination is very nice. Krishna personally maintains and cares for his devotees. Even if his devotee were to perform a heinous act, Krishna would nevertheless protect and purify him. It's not that we take advantage and think that we could do anything independently, but the devotee has to be fixed in his determination that I will never give up Krishna no matter what happens. We become proud that we have a master. We become proud that we have such a father. Like Lord Shiva was very proud. He knows that nothing is hidden from him. Everything is being arranged by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what could be the difficulty then? If we just see, actually, maybe this is for my good, whatever happened. And that's what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said. He said there's only one problem. What is that problem? He said no scarcity in the world except what? Krishna. We've forgotten Krishna. So again, we can see here, one time in New York, Srila Prabhupada was driving around and there was the Empire State Building. And he was looking at that and Prabhupada said, oh, all zero, zero. And then he looks at all the other buildings, all zeros. Looks at all the cars, zero. Looks at the country, zero. Planet Earth, zero. So all this is just zero if it's not in relationship to Krishna. Why? Because everything belongs to Krishna. Everything belongs to who? Rukmini Dwarkadish. And that's why Los Angeles, this city, has value because of this one thing. Because Krishna's here. And that makes all those billions of zeros valuable in this city. Because Krishna is the owner of everything, right? Everything animate or inanimate is controlled and owned by the Lord. So if we see everything as a property of Rukmini Dwarkadish, then we're fine. They're the owner. If they're the owners, Rukmini Dwarkadish, then who's the enjoyer? The owner, right? So if you try to enjoy, then what does that make you? Right, a thief. And that's why all the miseries are coming, because of this thief mentality, wanting to enjoy others' property and accepting more than our quota. So we have to follow these dharmic principles given in these Vedic literatures, and then we'll be happy. And Prabhupada wanted us to study this philosophy very, very carefully, because ignorance is no excuse to the law, right? If you drive on the wrong side of the road, you run a red light, oh, I didn't know, you're still going to get a ticket. You know, but we have the police force, the Yamadutas of the universe. You can't sweet talk them or try to trick them out of it. So we could follow Lord Shiva's example. He was a great Vaishnava, the greatest Vaishnava actually. And he's showing us how to surrender. Krishna says, just Mahameva Ye Prapajante, Mayamitam Tarantite. As soon as you surrender to me, there will be no more illusion. Immediately. So people perform so many austerities. Look at the austerities, penances that Lord Shiva is performing. What did he tell his wife? Who he's meditating on? It's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is what we're doing as devotees. We're performing some austerities, some penances. For what? For Krishna. And then, by this simple process, as soon as you surrender, you realize you're not fallen. It was only an illusion. I was dreaming. I am Krishna's, and Krishna is mine. And then all of that illusion is gone. All this nonsense. And Prabhupada said, you immediately become liberated. And you could become liberated within a second, he said. Provided we abide by the orders of Krishna. What is that? Sarva dharman prityatya mamakam saranam gaja. And so that's our position. We're actually not fallen, but we think we're fallen. So we Prabhupada again and again says, give up this nonsense thinking. And then you'll be liberated. So it's very interesting. Prabhupada said how important these verses are. Again and again, he just brings up the importances of these verses. And he said that it's already there. But you're not reading each verse. Read every day carefully. Try to assimilate, understand, and you'll get more profit. Every day, hundreds of yards. Hundreds of yards forward. So Prabhupada said, so these verses are so important. How nicely composed by Vyasadeva. In two lines, the whole thing is explained. This is Shastra. In two lines. Isn't this powerful? Just go on reading, and Prabhupada says, and you'll understand everything will be clear. So what is the difficulty? I'll ask you, what is the difficulty? We've been engaging in devotional service for how many decades, how many years, how many days? But yet we find that it's such a simple process within a second. So why is it that we're not liberated and free from this illusion? Because we want to stay in illusion, because of our desire, yes. Anybody have any other comments about that? Yes, Prabhu. That's all, Prabhu. Or in the back. Pretty sure. Vishal, I'm sorry. Yeah, Vishal Prabhu. Is there any mic for him? Do you want to just, I'll repeat it, just say what the question is. Exactly. That's why I mentioned how if one is sincerely think. Okay. So he was saying how Krishna protects one who performs a heinous act. Heinous act. So doesn't that determine, isn't that whether one did it deliberately or if he did it, yeah, like that. Is it intentional? Even if it's intentional, it may be, but it depends on the devotee. If he's completely attached to Krishna and realizes that I'm such a dog, that I'm such a fallen person, but yet I'll never give up Krishna. Because of that mentality, Krishna will protect him. But if he just does it deliberately and thinks that, oh, I'm independent, what is this Krishna? Then yes, he won't be protected. So that's the difference in the mentality. And I mentioned that. So thank you. It's a very important point. So any other ideas? Yeah, one may ask, I've been engaged in devotional service for so long, and we see so many devotees that have been engaged Krishna consciousness so long, but after some time, what happens? They're gone or like this. But see, the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak, like I was saying, we desire. So the minute we give up our focus on Krishna, then immediately the senses are attracted. So we may be willing, but the senses still want to enjoy. Or we may be thinking of Krishna, but yet the mind may still want its independence. I'm independent from Krishna. Pride. This is that pride that we're talking about. So Lord Shiva had the pride that he had a supreme master, you know, and he was completely absorbed in him. That's different than the pride of thinking that I want to become independent and enjoy someone else's property. So Thank you very much. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam. Hare Krishna.